Hello, and welcome to Life Matters, the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. We're honored to host a variety of guests within the pro-life movement, each bringing their own unique perspectives, experiences, and backgrounds. The views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect those of Life Matters, Assure Women's Center, or our affiliates. Our goal is to foster open, thoughtful dialogue around life-affirming issues and equip listeners to stand for life. This is part two of our interview with Dr. Dee Simone.
Welcome to Life Matters. I'm Toni Clark, Executive Director of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, and I'm so glad you're joining us today. Today, we're joined by Dr. Edward Dee Simone, Professor of Pharmacy Sciences at Creighton University, where he's taught since 1989. He's a pharmacist, researcher, speaker, and national pro-life leader. Dr. Dee Simone has served as faculty moderator of Creighton Students for Life since 1994 and sits on the board of several pro-life and patient safety organizations. We'll talk about his professional journey, his advocacy for life, and his perspective on the abortion pill. Dr. Dee Simone, welcome to Life Matters.
Thanks for inviting me.
So do you think the spread of abortion pills through telemedicine and mail order services impact patient safety? And what concerns do you have about the lack of direct medical supervision in chemical abortions?
Okay, that's a two-part question, yeah. I guess. Because my involvement with patient safety is about the normal practice of medicine and pharmacy. Is it the right drug for the right patient? Is it the right strength? And we review that. Okay. And so with this issue of abortion, again, it's not healthcare. So what kind of patient safety are we looking at if someone is using a drug that's going to kill an unborn child? We have to look at this telemedicine from a more patient safety, or actually the child safety perspective. You know, there's a nationally, there is a law has been passed for quite a long time ago. It requires drug utilization review when a pharmacist dispenses a prescription. We need to review the medication, make sure it's the right drug for the right patient, and all those questions that, that I mentioned before. And so I really believe that with a lot of this telemedicine, we're skirting the drug utilization review process. And so I think we need to look at that a little bit more.
Yeah, when you said the right drug with the right patient for the right patient, I think about that because we've essentially with the abortion pill, it's almost like a blanket prescription, and you don't. There is no, I'm gonna say oversight. It should be, and so we're basically saying this fits every female that wants to order it, and that's certainly not should not be. That certainly is not the right drug for the right patient.
Exactly.
There's no one doing that analysis.
Well, recently there was a report on the Planned Parenthood here in Bellevue, and what one of the findings in the report that was done by Thomas More Society, one of the findings in the report was that the whoever the physician was give the patients the drug and then take off out of town when they're required to be here for 48 hours in case the person has side effects. And so they weren't doing that. And so I think there's a lot of things that we can do to look at what's required by law and what's done and what isn't being done.
Do you think we'll see a rise in emergency room visits or long-term complications as a result of easier access to these drugs?
There's no doubt in my mind. Just those key things that I adverse effects that I just mentioned, just to address them. They're not, like I said, it's not nausea and vomiting or diarrhea. It's potential for heart attacks, fatalities, infections. These are, like I said, they're serious drugs.
You know, we've heard that patients have who have taken the abortion pill, we've heard that they're being told if something happens, if there's bleeding, when you go to the ER, don't tell them you took the abortion pill. You know, and just, don't tell them that, which once again, is just deceptive. You know, so I think to a certain extent, we, and I know there was a report out recently that talked, you know, more about the complications or the side effects that women are experiencing. But I don't know that we really know the true answer, because if people are going into the ER or going to their doctors and not disclosing that they took the abortion pill.
Exactly.
We don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah.
And actually, the chemical abortion, I think that's the appropriate term, yeah. is a chemical abortion.
Yeah.
We don't really know how many abortions are taking place now. You know, up until recently, we would see that number of 60 million babies have been aborted since Roe v. Wade. Mm-hmm. Now, with the dispensing of all these
we really don't know.
Chemicals, we don't know how many babies are dying because of that.
Yeah, I've been sharing a little bit, you know, from time to time with different people I speak to, and they always ask me about the abortion numbers. And, you know, we can quote the abortion numbers for Nebraska based on DHHS numbers. And I said, I really feel like that number is inaccurate because we really don't know. I'm sure it's higher than what's reported because those chemical abortions are not reported.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. What research or data would you like to see gathered to understand the harms of abortion, of the chemical abortion better?
I think we need to track the drugs that are being dispensed. We do that for all prescriptions here in every state.
Yeah.
We have a database in every state that tracks who wrote the prescription and what's it for and all those things. Somebody needs to be accessing that data and seeing who's getting what drug. And then we can, if someone is having a problem, whether they go to their own physician or they go to the ER, we can track it back to what is the actual cause of that. So if somebody has a heart attack, it's the cause of death is heart attack.
Right.
Yeah. Not they had a heart attack secondary to taking one of these drugs.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of the actual cause of death gets buried or the actual cause of whatever the physical problem is, gets buried. Into other titles and categories. So I would like to see us track those drugs, just like every other drug.
Yeah.
And somebody has to access that and monitor the outcomes.
Yeah, I'd love to see that as well. So the Students for Life has campaigned against abortion pills, not only because of their danger to women, but also to water safety. Kristen Hawkins, who is the president of Students for Life, argues that the Food and Drug Administration and Environmental Protection Agency have failed to study and regulate the abortion pill's potential environmental impact on water safety. She claims that chemically tainted medical waste, including blood and tissue from at-home medical abortions, is flushed into waterways and could harm humans, animals, and plants. Is this a real concern?
I like Kristen Hawkins. Yeah. We've actually had her here to speak at Creighton several times. And so these are the arguments. There's four major arguments in this regard. And there, I will say there is conflicting data, but I think there's a political
bias.
A little political bias to that. The first one is detection in water.
Okay.
Some researchers claim to have detected active metabolites of mifepristone in tap water and wastewater samples. It's getting through.
Hmm.
Second, there's a potential for endocrine dysfunction as a potent progesterone blocker. Critics argue that mifepristone could potentially disrupt hormonal balance in humans and wildlife if it enters the water supply, and that its full impact has not been studied. Mm. Three is insufficient studies. Some argue that the previous environmental assessments did not consider the widespread use of at-home abortions.
Yeah.
And that, looking at human fetal remains and doing an autopsy on those human fetal remains, and then looking at the drug metabolites in the wastewater. And then lastly, wastewater is not a perfect filter.
Yeah.
Proponents of environmental regulation argue that wastewater treatment systems are not foolproof and that some drugs, including pharmaceuticals, can pass through.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, that reminds me of, for years, we've looked at estrogens in our water from urine and, et cetera. And that estrogens don't get picked up all the time in our wastewater. Mm-hmm. And that some of this feminization of our children is related to this estrogens in wastewater. I haven't done that research, but I am telling you that that's an issue.
Wow.
And there's debate on both sides, people trying to give conflicting evidence.
Yeah.
I don't know how long that, you know, how that's going to end, but that's where the arguments are right now.
Yeah. Well, once again, even from a layperson standpoint, you know, I think about, you know, when they tell you don't put your medication, don't flush your medication.
Flush it. Exactly.
And because you don't know, we don't, you know, we find traces of medication, but it's okay for me to flush a human body, you know, the remains of an abortion down the toilet. There's a conflict.
Right.
Wow.
So we tell people not to flush. The FDA has said do not flush. They've done that for before the current administrator is there because there is a concern about those drugs, all drugs getting into the wastewater. Mm-hmm. Some drugs, because of the chemical structure, can go through. Some don't go through, you know, but that is an issue. And we tell pharmacies, we teach our students, when you dispense your drugs, you always tell your patients, do not, if you have any left, do not flush it.
Yeah. Wow.
And we have a program here in Nebraska that the Nebraska pharmacist has developed, where you can go into certain pharmacies, you can go online and you can find pharmacies that will collect those and take them.
Right.
So.
Life Matters is the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. And it is a ministry of Assure Women's Center. Before the year ends, you can make an impact for life. If we raise $500,000 by midnight on December 31st, some generous donors will add $75,000 more to help women find hope, truth, and courage to choose life for their unborn babies. Give now at firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com.
Welcome back to Life Matters. I'm Toni Clark with the Assure Women's Center. And if you're just tuning in, I'm talking today with Dr. Edward M. D. Simone, Professor of Pharmacy Sciences, Creighton University, and Faculty Moderator of Creighton Students for Life. So I recently learned that the Students for Life of America has also been active in calling on Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and the FDA to do a full review of mifepristone's approval. Can you share with me anything more about that review and the status?
The announcement was made by Secretary Kennedy, at least it was posted October the 2nd, so it's just a month old that it was posted. But the letter, and you can go online to the FDA and you can read that. The letter from Kennedy cited a study by the Ethics and Public Policy Center, EPPC, that suggested, and this is a quote, potential dangers that may attend offering mifepristone without sufficient medical support or supervision. That's what they're looking at, what needs to be looked at. The letter also mentioned FDA data, which reported 2,740 adverse events between 2000 and 2012.
Okay.
They actually had some data on that, including 416 requiring blood transfusions.
Yeah.
Okay. And that comes out of a CBS News report.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's and this EPPC study said that nearly 11% of women experience a serious adverse event when using these drugs, and some other sources contest that figure.
Yeah.
Okay. But this EPPC study has that 11%, and that's actually low considering the magnitude of the adverse effects that these drugs can produce.
And that's those that are reported.
Correct.
Right. And so if we were to report all of the side effects from a chemical abortion, there's no telling what we would find.
I really believe that we would see the magnitude of the problem with that. And even at this, if you look at this report, the data, those 2,700 plus, is from 2000 to 2012. That was 13 years ago.
Yeah, you're right.
Where's the rest of the data? Mm-hmm. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, there are people out there who want to continue this abortion process, and therefore they're not jumping to find the answers that we're looking for.
Oh, absolutely. I just often say, just follow the money.
Yes, it's true.
I hate to say it, but just follow the money. Mm-hmm. Students for Life of America has also called on pharmacies to vow not to sell chemical abortion pills. As a pharmacist yourself, how do you respond to that call? And maybe it ties into something that we talked about earlier, just that, you know, conscience.
Conscience.
Yeah.
Well, one, let's go back to that. The American Pharmacists Association has a conscience clause. Mm-hmm. It's still on the books since 97, but it's not a law.
Okay.
And so that's a national statement.
Okay.
For example, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology is a big supporter of abortion.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So at least we have a statement in the Pharmacy Association that says, if you choose to do it, you shouldn't be harmed by refusing to do that.
Right.
And it's wherever you happen to work, let them figure out a mechanism to get around that.
Gotcha.
And so... now, unless there's legal protection, and I mentioned, like, Illinois has a great, as far as I know, it's the best conscience legislation in the country.
Which is really interesting, because...
That's where all those pharmacists were fired, because the governor says fire them.
Yeah.
And so everybody had to be... Mm-hmm. Now, in defense of the companies, Walmart was a big one, Walgreens, Walmart, CVS. What they did is the governor said, we have to do this, so... It was a midnight attack that happened. They'd come into the pharmacy, say to the pharmacist, here, sign this that you're not going to refuse to dispense it. Mm. And if the pharmacist said, no, I'm not signing that, they said, go home. Mm. But they didn't fire him, by the way. Yeah. They put him unpaid indefinite leave. Mm. So whatever that means.
Wow.
But at least up until that point, even these big companies provided a system to let pharmacists step away.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen or heard much since then. I think people have come to realize we need to give our health professionals a right of conscience.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're trying here.
Yeah.
I've testified four different bills on healthcare professional right of conscience in Nebraska. And we just in 2023 was the fourth time we had a bill, and we were one vote shy that Merv Rippey would not go along with that. And excuse me. It was 2011, 13, 23, and 25. And so we need one more vote in future legislation.
So are you saying that there are no current protections for pharmacists who refuse to participate in dispensing these drugs right now?
That is correct.
Wow.
There are other things the law that
there's no law.
You can, you can step behind. I haven't seen any cases of pharmacists being fired, for example, or penalized.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a way of getting around that.
Okay.
But we need in Nebraska
a
conscience. And it's not just for pharmacists, for healthcare professionals.
Yeah.
So physicians need it. Nurses, everybody needs that. So if they don't want to participate in an abortion, step away.
Right. So what can consumers or communities do to encourage pharmacies to take a stand for life?
Well, this is a tough one. But one, if you're pro-life, talk to the pharmacy owner, talk to the pharmacy manager, send a letter to corporate. I think you need to be heard and you need to do it not just alone, because people say, oh, it's just one person.
Yeah.
I would mobilize my church.
Mm.
I would mobilize my social group. All of us who believe that this is wrong, we need to
let them know.
We need to let them know because you mentioned before, it all comes down to money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so if we say, okay, I'm going to go someplace else.
Yeah.
That might change.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not asking them to do it. We're not saying not do it at all. I mean, that would be ideal.
Absolutely.
But we're saying if you have a healthcare professional who doesn't want to participate,
don't force them.
Don't force them.
Absolutely.
That's all we're asking. And so
seems fair to me.
Exactly. Yeah. Another thing to do, pharmacists, we'll address pharmacists here.
Mm-hmm.
Ask for an exemption with your employer.
Mm. Okay.
You know, way back in, I'm not even remember what year it was. It was in the late 90s. And while I was teaching at Butler University, and I used to work in the hospital part-time just mm-hmm. to keep up with some of the stuff. And when I interviewed with the director of pharmacy, he was very nice. And he said, we'd like to hire you. And I said, I only have one requirement. Mm-hmm. I will not fill any orders mm-hmm. or for drugs or IVs mm-hmm. That are abortifacient drugs. Mm-hmm. And he kind of looked at me and he said, we'll work around that.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the 5 or 6 years that I worked there before I came here, we never had an issue.
Yeah.
We had a system in place.
It's good. Good. So people just take a personal stand. Right. Sometimes they will be able to figure it out.
And then lastly, you could go to one of those organizations that help people mm-hmm. If you get into trouble.
Yeah.
You know, Thomas More Society is mm-hmm. great here in the ACLJ. Mm-hmm. They're a great organization, Alliance Defending Freedom, and there's all these organizations will take on those
Absolutely.
Cases.
Absolutely, yeah. Do you think the pharmacy students might be affected if they express pro-life convictions during their training or residencies?
I haven't seen that as a problem. With the pharmacy students, I haven't really heard of any students having a problem. Good.
So what advice do you give young pharmacists or healthcare workers who want to live out their faith courageously?
And I hope that they are pro-life,
mm-hmm.
but if they're pro-life, they need to become active in everything that they do.
Okay.
And as I mentioned at the beginning of this interview, when I started to realize that I needed to be doing these, being involved in mm-hmm. pro-life activities, one thing leads to another. There's so many opportunities to be involved. Mm-hmm. Get involved with organizations. Mm-hmm. Talk about the pro-life movement and why it's important.
Yeah.
And do the best that you can.
Yeah.
To stay straight mm-hmm. and avoid these, situations that if you participated in, you're going to think, oh my God, I should never have done that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good advice. Good advice. What final encouragement would you offer to listeners who want to stand for life where God has placed them?
I think the same advice I'd give to students, and that is get involved.
Mm-hmm.
If understand what it means to be pro-life.
Yeah.
As I just mentioned to you, mm-hmm. a lot of people don't know the difference between a contraceptive and an abortifacient drug. Yeah. Understand what those drugs are and how they work and what mm-hmm. the outcomes of those. Think about the damage that these drugs can do. So need to educate yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things my wife and I, from the time I started teaching 49 years ago, we knew we were faithful members of mm-hmm. the church. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have a lot of money, but we gave mm-hmm. something, to the church. And as we started to earn some money, we gave more to the church. Right now, I think we have, aside from the charities that we normally donate to, we have about 5 or 6 pro-life organizations. We give them money.
Yeah.
We support it, what they do. Mm-hmm. And that's why, for me, that's why being actively involved with mm-hmm. the Creighton Students for Life, I get to share my experiences with them. And if they do a great job. The mm-hmm. students are just mm-hmm. very dedicated to this. And so when they graduate from school and go on, all of these students take this understanding of what it means to be pro-life. Mm-hmm. And they hopefully they take it with them to their jobs, to their families, mm-hmm. To whatever it is that they do and their churches, mm-hmm. wherever.
Good. So finally, how can our listeners be praying for you and your ongoing work at Creighton and through the pro-life organizations that you serve?
Okay. That's a great question. And one of my favorite comments back to people is prayers are always welcome.
Yes.
So I just tell people the best thing that people can do for me is to pray for me, pray for my wife, pray for my family, because we just believe that this is what God has called us to do. And so prayer is the answer, at least in terms of what we do.
Good. We certainly will do that. You know, we talked a lot today about intervention and how God has used those interventions in your life to bring you where you are today. And I'm hoping today that someone's listening and this is an intervention for them, that this is maybe perhaps God's way of saying, you need to stop listening and get involved. Not the stop listening part, but really keep listening and really get involved. And so hopefully today someone's heard what you're saying and thinking about the interventions that they've had in their life, and they're drawn to the pro-life work, pro-life prayer, pro-life financial support, and even just sometimes being a bold pro-life spokesperson in their workplace or in their families, because that's what we need.
Exactly.
So thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you for your lifelong example of faith, integrity, and courage. Your work really does remind us that science and faith are not in conflict. They meet in the sacred call to protect life at every stage. So I'm grateful for your wisdom and for your witness. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely.
Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. To learn more about the ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. There you can learn about the many services we provide, including how we come alongside abortion-minded mothers and empower women to choose life for her and her baby, as well as find our most current broadcasts and all of our past episodes. You can also find information on our website about how you can partner with us in the life-saving work of Assure. Before the year ends, you can make an impact for life. If we raise $500,000 by midnight on December 31st, some generous donors will add $75,000 more to help women find hope, truth, and courage to choose life for their unborn babies. Give now at firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. Thanks for listening to Life Matters. Join us again next week at the same time right here on BOT Radio Network.